The Jaguars lose their preseason opener, but the bigger news happened off the field. Major candidates running for governor of Florida take the stage this week at Jacksonville University and at the beaches. Restaurants may have to close up earlier to curb violence in the streets. Some of the stories making headlines this week. Good Friday morning, and thanks for listening. I'm Melissa Ross, and as ever, we are live from Studio 5 for First Coast Connect. We're going to talk about a busy week in the news with our Friday Media Roundtable. You can get on the line now at 549-2937 to join us. Then later, the cast of the classic Broadway musical Kiss Me, Kate on stage at the Alhambra Theater. That's a little later on in the hour. But first, it's Friday and time for our weekly media roundtable. Lots of news this week, by the way, as we welcome Dan Scanlon, reporter for the Florida Times-Union.
Good morning.
Local radio host Angela Spears.
Good morning, Melissa.
Good morning. David Cotton of the Jacksonville Daily Record.
Happy Friday.
Happy Friday to you. And A.G. Gankarski of Florida Politics.
Good morning.
Guys, so good to have you. Lots to talk about this week. Gosh, there was so much news. And the script is thick. Everything from a local teen who was forced out of his parents' home for being gay, a happy ending to his story that's gone international, to also putting the damper on late-night partying in Jacksonville Beach. Plus, all the candidates for governor came to town this week in their final debates before the August 28th primary. We'll talk about that, too. But topping the news this morning, last night's Jaguars game against the Saints. It was the first of the preseason, but it was notable in more ways than one. Now, sadly, Jacksonville lost to New Orleans 24-20. But also, before the action started, four Jaguars players, Telvin Smith, Jalen Ramsey, Leonard Fournette, and TJ Yeldon, all waited in the tunnel until after the national anthem had concluded before coming out to play. This happened at a number of other stadiums around the country. Three members of the Seahawks did the same thing. Now, Smith told reporters he has beliefs. He wants to stand by them, but also doesn't want to become a distraction. If there was any question as to whether social justice protests would continue this NFL season, we got our answer last night. Malcolm Jenkins of the Philadelphia Eagles, one of the most outspoken players in recent years, was joined by his teammate, Devontae Bosby, in raising a fist while the anthem played. And in the only reported instance of players kneeling, Kenny Stills and Albert Wilson of the Miami Dolphins took a knee during the national anthem down in South Florida before their team's game against the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. One of their teammates, Robert Quinn, raised his fist. So we're going to begin the hour with a closer discussion of this. What's your reaction to the players last night, the first game of the preseason around the country, including those actions of the players here in Jacksonville? Give us a call at 549-2937. That's 549-2937. Or go online, send your emails to firstcoastconnect@wjct.org, tweets to @MelissaInJax, or you can weigh in on our Facebook page. Of course, Angela Spears, these protests, which have been going on for some time, they really turned into a crisis back last fall when the president criticized the league's owners for not penalizing the players. Then the NFL came out with a new policy, and it varies from team to team as to whether an owner will punish a player for expressing his views. So, you know, here in Jacksonville, we know that Shad Khan is probably not going to penalize those players for staying in the tunnel during the national anthem. He's respecting their right to express their point of view on police brutality. That's what this protest is about.
The NFL caved in, Melissa, first of all, when it came to that policy. I think Roger Goodell caved in to you-know-who when it came to that. And I think it's great that the players are able to stand up for their rights if they choose to do so. As you mentioned, the whole reason why they are protesting while they're kneeling, while they're raising their fist, is to protest racial inequality and police brutality. We cannot forget that is the reason why. And I want to start off by just starting our conversation with this. Congress shall make no law respecting an establishment of religion or prohibiting the free exercise thereof or abridging the freedom of speech or of the press, or the right of the people peacefully to assemble and to petition the government for redress of grievances.
The First Amendment.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And that's exactly what they're doing.
549-2937. David Cotton, the First Amendment has come up time and again, particularly since the president has ramped up his attacks on the media over the last couple of years. What about the other argument around these NFL protests that you aren't necessarily allowed to protest in your workplace, that these are employees and that people that have disagreed with players taking a knee are saying, well, I can't say whatever I want at my workplace.
Well, I mean, you're talking about a union and you're talking about a large employer. And these are issues that in any other workplace, a union and a large employer would have to come together if there was an issue like this and work it out. You know, the NFL essentially could have let this issue stay, you know, just simmering like it was all over the summer. Instead, they came out with this weird policy earlier this year.
And then they kind of walked it back.
Yeah. And you know,
because the union got involved.
Absolutely. Yeah. And then, you know, then the president has fueled the flames and the players are responding. And then they came out last night to get ahead of all the morning shows this morning with this we've come together policy saying if you want to, you know, do this and express yourself, do it in the locker room, stay in the tunnel, don't do it on the field.
And how about the fact that Dan Scanlon and AG, out of all the teams that played last night, two Florida teams stand out for their expressions. Players in Jacksonville staying in the tunnel, players in Miami taking a knee.
Only in Florida, I guess. But sorry, that's a later segment.
Yeah.
I think that to pull metaphors here, to change metaphors, I think the ball is now in the NFL's court. Are they going to fine? Are they going to back up the words of a week or two ago? Or are they going to sit back and see and maybe negotiate with the unions, which is something obviously that was not done in this. They just made it. They said, unions, the owners, you're going to do this. You're going to fine them. And will any owners take it further and fine a player who protests?
That's the question, too.
You know, and an interesting issue is brought up with the Jaguars who that did not appear for the anthem and did not, you know, the four that we mentioned before. I mean, Jacksonville and the Jaguars are basically linked in so many ways. We see the mayor at practices all the time during the workday. You see things like, you know, city incentives. We've seen $88 million go into the stadium. We're going to see more going to the entertainment complex. So there are these little local political ramifications. Regarding the invocation of the First Amendment, though, I don't know if it specifically applies here because Congress is not passing the law. The president's getting on Twitter and popping off. That doesn't have the force of law. That doesn't even have the force of an executive order. It's just, you know, the president playing culture war. And as we know, he has plenty of scandals and plenty of things to distract from that make a culture war play work. But ultimately, this is a workplace relations issue. This is something that will probably be part of the next round of collective bargaining. But, you know, until you have collective bargaining happen again and you have a minority of players who are participating in these, I think they're just going to let it ride and you're going to see this throughout the year.
I think it's going to be interesting as well to see what the networks do this year. I know there was a lot of fluff, depending on what side of the political spectrum you're on, of the NFL lost ratings, the NFL stayed the same. But I think the network television producers are going to have to make a decision. Do we show this or do we not show this?
Yeah.
And they did not show a lot of it last year.
That's correct.
They looked the other way.
The president tweeted about a half hour ago, stand proudly for the anthem or be suspended without pay.
That's what I mean by culture war stuff. I mean, you've got a president with a Russian investigation. You got a president who's got all kinds of issues. One of his allies just got indicted, you know, in the Congress for financial irregularities. So, yeah, you're going to want to talk about the anthem because it keeps you from talking about other things.
And, you know, I think the NFL fan and the Trump supporter sometimes cross the same paths. There was certainly a lot of protest among NFL, diehard NFL fans last year about those players taking the knee and many threatening to turn in their tickets or their season tickets and walk away.
But as Angela pointed out, the whole reason for this protest, and it began with a player named Colin Kaepernick, was to call attention to racial inequities in this country. And these players are using their platform to do that. Whether you agree or disagree, the whole reason Kaepernick started kneeling is because a Green Beret took him aside and said, sitting during the anthem looks disrespectful to me. I understand why you're doing this, but maybe if you kneeled, it would be more respectful. So, but even that action was taken as a sign of disrespect by people that don't like the protest. But it gets to the heart of the issue is not about disrespecting the flag or America. It's these players saying that people of color still face massive inequities when it comes to the criminal justice system. And that's Melissa, what it's about.
And Melissa, we need to make that point each and every time we talk about that, is that I think that it gets lost in so many things. It becomes, oh, you're disrespecting the flag. Oh, you're not American. You should be kicked out of the United States. You should lose your job. It goes back to, Melissa, that's the point that it's about. It's about the inequities. It's about police brutality.
And I think it's notable that the Jaguars players have emerged as some of the most vocal in the league when it comes to this.
I think so, and I think it's also important to point out that Telvin Smith wore salute to service cleats last night. I mean, you know, the Jaguars do a lot during the game for the military. They have rebranded their entire North End Zone, you know, cabana area to a company that is veteran-owned and veteran-focused.
They believe in their country.
Absolutely, yeah.
All right, let's go to lots of calls on this, 549-2937. To join the show. Aaron is on the South Side. Hi, Aaron. What are your thoughts?
So one of my concerns is that this argument seems to always boil down to a few quick talking points. And I don't think those talking points are necessarily valid. The First Amendment, for instance, it's not the government here that's doing this. The one thing that I don't think anybody ever discusses is the actual flag code. They're citizens. They don't have to follow the flag code. Two, the amount of disrespect that they are breaking the flag code when they bring that giant flag and hold it horizontally on the field. The people wearing the flags on their T-shirts in the stands who are complaining about people kneeling, they're breaking the flag code. So I find it ironic that the people who are complaining about the people who are kneeling, who are doing something not disrespectful, are actually disrespecting the flag itself. They're not listening to the music. They're yelling at people. They're eating a hot dog while it's playing. All of that's disrespectful, but no one seems to complain about that.
Okay, yeah, thanks. That's a good point.
He does have a point. That's a good point.
Mark in Mandarin. Hi, Mark. Good morning to you.
Hi, I just want to say with respect to the comment that the NFL caved into the president, from all that I've read in Variety, Deadline, New York Times, Wall Street Journal, it has nothing to do with the president. The NFL gets billions of dollars from broadcast companies and other media companies for the rights to broadcast and stream the games. This is why the players get so much salary. And the NFL was just facing a situation where they're losing revenues. When these contracts come up for renewal, they're not going to pay so many billions of dollars if the viewers aren't watching. So it was just a financial decision.
Mark, I think you're absolutely right about that.
You know, he speaks to the both these callers actually speaks to the commodification of the flag. You know, last 50 years or so, as we've seen the end of military service on a mandatory basis, you know, we've seen a gradual encroachment on what the flag actually means to where it becomes, you know, a marketable piece of material, a flag or a bathing suit or something like that, made in China often. And that really speaks to it. I mean, we've moved beyond what American ideals are about to sort of a vulgar embrace of symbolism that doesn't add up to anything other than people feeling good in the moment or feeling bad in the moment, as the case may be.
One other thought that just comes to me is that if you're going to protest and you have a place where you are seen better protesting, i.e. a football field, isn't it a better place to be seen? These players could go out and they could stand a line. They could go protest in front of a state house or the White House. They would not be anything more than one other voice in a crowd. Here, they have the ability to get the word out, as long as you don't forget what the reason for the protest is. They're doing it. And if the TV cameras point the other way, the message is still getting out somehow.
549-2937, what do you think about players last night in the first preseason game of the fall season taking a knee in Miami, some players raising fists around the country in Jacksonville? Four players stayed in the tunnel. Mark on the West Side. Hi, Mark.
Yeah, you mentioned somebody earlier. Colin who? But that's kind of my point that the gentleman just alluded to.
You mean how Colin Kaepernick, is not playing since he started this whole thing?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I can't even believe I haven't heard from him. But that kind of speaks to my point. We hear a lot about these people on the game nights, but I'm kind of curious, where have they been pushing that message and getting the word out to the people the last 8 months out of the year? I haven't heard anything. Why haven't they used their First Amendment rights to write a letter to the editor or to protest at a state house or do any of these things? And also, I always have to laugh at, we get all this, all excited about this. Over the last couple of years, medical evidence has shown that probably about 100% of these players are essentially brain damaged. So who cares, really, when you boil down to it? I mean,
well, they're brain damaged. Well, let's talk about that. They have a few years of glory and high pay, and they pay an unbelievably high price. Entertaining a mostly white audience, let's be clear. And yes, mm-hmm. they do it willingly, but they suffer enormous physical damage for playing this game.
Do.
And so, that's a separate issue, though, I think, but a valid one that you're raising, and one that we've gotten into on this program quite a bit. Now, as to Colin Kaepernick, he has actually formed a foundation. Yeah. And I'm looking at the website. Its mission is to fight oppression of all kinds globally through education and social activism. So he actually is, he has become an activist. He appeared the other day at Penn Law School with a team of lawyers. He has a case alleging there was collusion between NFL teams to keep him out of the league. So there's a little background for you on him. But Mark, thanks for the call.
Oh, and I want to say locally real quick, Malik Jackson literally held a thing for children of, service members and veterans, a football camp just for them recently. So Jaguar players are doing stuff in the community, but it doesn't get as much attention, I think, is what happens on the field.
And that's what I was going to add to that, is that they are doing things off the field. They do have foundations. They are taking their fight, so to speak, or their protest that they're doing, and they're doing things in the community and trying to educate the community when it comes to that.
As you pointed out, though, Dan, there's nothing like the ratings and the number of eyeballs on them right before the game starts.
Right. And I mean, you're talking millions and millions of fans who are watching. And if they remember that the message is against police brutality, then the message continues to be there and embedded in the brain. If the cameras look the other way, then there's discussion among people watching, hey, what happened to the players? It's still on top of the head.
And it's up to us as journalists to make sure that we continue to say that.
Just a minute ago, here's an email from a listener. 45 minutes ago, the president tweeted that players who protest should be suspended without pay. I doubt that the Jaguars are going to suspend their best players during the regular season, considering the huge investment made in winning in the NFL. Okay, by the way, they lost last night.
Yeah,
in the last
it's
preseason.
It's preseason.
Well.
I know, it was a preseason.
They put Tanner Lee out there. That's the problem.
I need another third quarterback. I mean, at the end of the day, the president doesn't make the policy decisions for the NFL. And he can go on Twitter and he can make these blanket statements, but at the end of the day, I don't see it having really any effect there in New York headquarters.
But if it impacts the fans, and if the fans react negatively to this, then the NFL is going to take notice, and they're going to reinforce what the president is saying, because that's going to become their rule of law.
And it's been interesting to watch how Shad Khan has navigated this as the guy stood in London at Wembley, linking arms with his players, mm-hmm. supporting them very publicly. The only minority owner, NFL owner, right?
Yeah.
How is Shad Khan going to play this?
Well, he gave Trump $1 million for his inauguration back in 2017. However, Khan has backed away largely from that stance he had in London. He basically said, we all want the same thing. We want the flag to be respected. And, Khan's been all over the place with this stuff. In terms of remarks for public consumption, you know, he's been a little bit more vanilla than otherwise. And I think he's going to keep it vanilla because he's got business deals to worry about. He's already made his point about what he really thinks. And, you know, going forward, I think it's just about keeping business going, you know, keeping, you know, sort of like Lenny Curry. You know, Lenny Curry's not going to take a hard position against the NFL players on this, you know, even though it would play well with his purported base because, you know, he wants to be seen as a middle of the road guy on this issue. He doesn't want to get sideways with the players on this issue. He doesn't want to have, you know, a player blow him up on Twitter because, you know, Lenny Curry wants to be seen as a big football fan. I think Shad Khan's going to play it down the middle this way, you know, going forward also.
Here's an email from another listener. The fact is, it's bad for business. The NFL is losing fans because of this. Here's a comment on Facebook from Jennifer. The president committed treason by publicly supporting Russia over our own intelligence agencies. But please tell me how NFL players kneeling for the anthem are the ones being unpatriotic. My father flew 10,000 hours over Vietnam. These players are not disrespecting these service members. Our military fought and died for the freedoms we enjoy.
Well, it's like AG said earlier, it's a distraction from the real issues. That's what the president is able to do with Twitter. He's able to distract.
Let's talk about some Florida issues now. As the race for governor came to town this week, if you're just tuning into the roundtable, we're going to shift gears now. Give us a call at 549-2937. Now, first the Republicans, then the Democrats met on the JU campus for the final time before voters go to the polls on August 28th. Adam Putnam and Ron DeSantis had a bitter debate on Wednesday, and there was a much more laid-back affair last night as the five Democratic candidates appeared at JU for a town hall. Now, as we discuss the race, Politico is reporting that Duval County Sheriff Mike Williams, speaking of law enforcement, is reportedly on a short list to be tapped as Ron DeSantis's running mate. Lieutenant Governor Williams?
Now,
let me quickly say, while Wednesday's GOP debate was a love call to President Trump and a slugfest between Putnam and DeSantis, the Democrats were having none of that. Here's candidate Philip Levine.
And I believe that the future of Florida is at risk. And it's at risk because of the fact that we have sea level rise that's rising. We have a minimum wage that's way too low. But even greater than that, we're at risk by two words. Donald Trump and his mini-me, Rick DeSantis.
It's Ron DeSantis.
Ooh.
Okay. Democrats mostly stuck to their talking points during this forum last night at JU, which was televised but was competing with the Jags game, of course. Here's former Congresswoman Gwen Graham.
I'm the only candidate who has actually defeated a Republican in a Republican wave year in a Republican district. I'm ready to do it again in 2018 and lead Florida into a bright future.
Okay, and one more clip from the forum last night. It's Tallahassee Mayor Andrew Gillum.
I am on this stage as the most progressive candidate running for governor, as the only non-millionaire, non-billionaire running. I don't believe that you should have to be able to stroke your own check in order to serve the people of the state of Florida. And with your help, I'll be the next governor of the great state of Florida.
Okay, and the night before, we saw Adam Putnam calling Ron DeSantis the Seinfeld candidate, saying there's nothing there. It's about nothing. And okay, so we're talking about the governor's race now. How did these candidates do? Did they change the narrative in any way, AG, as we head to the primary?
No, they did not change the narrative in any way, although Wednesday's debate was epic. Adam Putnam, knowing he's going to lose, went down swinging, you know, barb after barb on Ron DeSantis. DeSantis took it. DeSantis gave back in kind, and he just reinforced the narrative. The Mike Williams piece that you mentioned earlier, we want to get into that just a little bit. Williams was the third Duval endorser, you know, or Duval area endorser for DeSantis. Senator Rob Bradley, Representative Travis Cummins already endorsed. But, you know, Williams put that out as a deliberate signal. I am bucking the rest of the Duval establishment. I am supporting DeSantis, and this could be his reward, being mentioned on this list, even if he might not get there.
Does he have a realistic chance of getting that?
He has a one in nine chance.
Nine names on the list.
Yeah, he has a 1 in 9 chance, according to Politico. It might just be something to make him feel good, but he's at least in the game. On the Democratic side, the forum is just basically shadow boxing. It was 5 Kent Justice this week in Jacksonville type interviews. I didn't go too deep. The people got hit hardest was Gwen Graham, with some questions about her lack of executive experience, which a lot of people thought were out of bounds. Andrew Gillum got asked.
Why? Because she's a woman?
Exactly. Andrew Gillum got asked if he was a democratic socialist, if he's a socialist or a capitalist. Nobody else got that treatment.
And he didn't really quite answer the question.
Well,
right?
I mean, it wasn't really a question that was, you know, in line with the rest of the debate. I mean, he's trying to talk about policy issues. Are you a socialist? So it was something that...
You thought that people saw that as a cheap shot question, maybe?
They saw it was out of bounds, considering the kid gloves that Green and Levine got. They didn't get the same kind of attacks. So that was a big, you know, question about the debate. But Gwen Graham is up in the polls. Gwen Graham's going to stay up in the polls. Women like her. There's 4 men in the race. They all blend together. This is Gwen Graham's year to get the nomination.
Jim on the West Side, and then we'll go back to our panel. Go ahead, Jim.
I thought the moderator's choice of shoes and socks was very distracting.
What?
Right on.
Oh,
right on.
What? You're talking about Kent? Kent Justice?
Did you notice he had on these tan shoes and these blue socks with a design on them, bright blue, and then a darker suit, and it just doesn't look very professional.
Wow.
And one other thing, I thought it was interesting that they put the 2 Republicans up on a night that was essentially a free night for viewing, and then they put the Democrats up against the football game.
You know, I was told that was unintentional. But thanks for the call, Jim. Yeah, thank you for the call.
I think the debate schedule came out before the NFL schedule came out.
Yeah, I don't think they intended that. But it was unfortunate for local Democratic voters that might have wanted to watch the game. Dan Scanlon.
Very interesting counterpoint, bringing up Williams again. If you've seen the campaign ad with all the sheriffs, Williams is the only sheriff wearing a jacket and a dress shirt. All
yes.
The others are in their uniforms. I wonder if that's a conscious decision on his part to look more... you know, assistant governor kind of
lieutenant governor type.
So Mike Williams has aspirations.
Let's just be clear here.
Yeah,
I mean, I've heard his name floated around as someone who could possibly run for mayor after Lenny Curry. I mean, I think he does have higher aspirations than just being Jacksonville sheriff.
And he's very comfortable, having attended the transgender seminar last week. He was extremely comfortable on stage with some very emotional questions being thrown up. And I think he's a very even keel kind of guy.
Okay.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, Mike Williams, he's got a political future. He's endorsing a lot of people this cycle. And, you know, he's looking at the next step for sure. So you've got to watch him politically. He's going to sail the reelection regardless. I mean, if he doesn't get the lieutenant governor pick, he's got no real competition for reelection. So watch Mike Williams going forward.
And if you're just tuning in, we are breaking down a very busy news week on our Friday media roundtable. So many big stories happened. You can join us at 549-2937. Now, Dan, you mentioned a transgender forum the other day. Also making news this week when we talk about LGBT issues, the incredible story of a local kid named Seth Owen. He's 18 years old, and Seth is off to his dream school, Georgetown University, in just a couple of weeks. Now, Seth's story went viral after his parents basically kicked him out of the house for refusing to attend the family's church, which Seth felt was extremely anti-gay, along with being very sexist, he said. So he thought his dream of Georgetown was gone forever because he was on the outs with his folks and they would not sign his loan paperwork for Georgetown. But then a teacher started a GoFundMe account for Seth, and it quickly blew up and topped $100,000, more than covering his college costs. And the icing on the cake with all of the publicity around this, Georgetown announced they're giving Seth Owen what amounts to a full ride to attend Georgetown's famed School of Foreign Service. So he's going to take that $140,000 from the GoFundMe account, and with the help of the local nonprofit Jasmine, which helps kids like Seth, he's going to establish a scholarship for kids that are in circumstances like the one he found himself in. So what an amazing story.
Yeah.
Yeah. And shout out to Claire Goforth over at Folio Weekly, who was the first one to write about Seth. And just from hearing this kid, he wasn't looking for national notoriety. I think he was just trying to get to college. And good for him for making an adult decision, mm-hmm. saying, you know what, I'm going to do this on my own. I'm going to couch surf. And now he's going to turn around and take this money and do good with it.
And help others. And help
Lift,
others
lift, with lift it. While you climb.
Mm. You That's know, right.
But the spotlight's a reality for LGBT youth especially. So many of them end up homeless. So many of them end up dispossessed. Their families reject them. They don't have a place to go.
Jasmine exists.
Yeah, and the reason the story feels so good is because we know those stories of people who fall through the cracks, homeless, substance abuse, you name it, the list goes on. And this is a counter narrative, but this also spotlights what needs to be done.
And you know, this is very nice to see Jacksonville in the national spotlight for an LGBT issue that has a positive ending, considering right. that Duval County right now has 3 of the nation's 16 transgender woman murders.
Yeah.
So we are a significant percentage. And only yesterday, JSO did release a sketch of a suspect in the last transgender murder, which is a nice step up. And again, that transgender seminar last week, 90 minutes, some people did walk out because they just didn't like the party line they were hearing, but at least it was held. And there is a team now of officers who are going to work with that community, which is a big step. So there's some nice news coming out of what is in essence tragedy, both for this young man and for the community at large.
And it is wonderful that he is stepping up and he's going to give back and wants to help mm-hmm. other youth who may be facing this issue.
Right. Jasmine, it stands for Jacksonville Area Sexual Minority Youth Network. They work with hundreds of kids like Seth all over this area.
And it's just, when reading the story, Melissa, it's just so sad, too, to hear what some of the children, what some of the youth have to go through, as we just heard.
That's right.
Just with the family neglecting them.
And when we discuss young people in this city, they're getting a bit of a smackdown. It seems the good times in Jacksonville Beach lately have been a little too good.
Yeah.
You heard about this?
Yeah.
City leaders at the beach say they're moving forward with a plan to close restaurants in Jacks Beach now at midnight instead of at 2 a.m. Mayor Charlie Latham says the downtown area has become unsafe, with fights breaking out practically every night. Violence, shootings, all manner of mayhem. Business owners are not happy about this, saying that they will have to pay the price for this wrecking crew that's running up and down A1A and First Avenue South to 8th Avenue North.
This is a failure of law enforcement administration that they're spotlighting with this change. I think they're going to regret it in the end, because the optics of this are they can't keep the streets safe. It reinforces what people believe in the beach communities. You can still have shootings and fights before midnight just as easily as after. So I don't know if this is going to fix the problem. In fact, they've spotlighted the problem, but where's John McGowan when you need him?
Yeah, right.
He's going to law school, so he will no longer be on this program. But give us a call. Give us a call at the beaches if you have an opinion about this new curfew out there at 549-2937.
Well, as the cop reporter for the Florida Times Union, I've certainly done a lot of stories in the past few months about some of the issues out at the beach, as well as issues that have occurred over the past few years during some of their festivals. As was pointed out yesterday morning during the press conference about the fact that a police officer and a 27-year-old man exchanged gunfire at 10:30 at night in Jacksonville Beach, a lot of their problems they're claiming in Jacksonville Beach are coming because people are crossing the ditch.
Mm-hmm.
They're not Jacksonville Beach residents.
Right.
They claim it's the rest of us coming to party at the beach. Well, guess what? All along the southeast coast from Savannah and Charleston on down, people come to those beach communities because they're the beach.
Well, and they want to have a good time. And maybe it's looking for those.
And those businesses want people coming, as many as they can get.
And maybe it's a time for Jacksonville Beach to kind of look at how Daytona Beach rebranded itself. Remember, Daytona Beach was known as that party atmosphere where you went for spring break, not very family friendly. And now look at it. My cousin and her two children and her boyfriend, they're thinking about coming to Florida and they want to come to Daytona because it's a family place, they say now.
And so it took a while for them to rebrand, but they were successful. Yeah.
You know, that police department is doing proactive stuff. They just recently installed a video camera system that in fact worked within a few days of its installation by catching an image of a suspected rapist's vehicle. So they're doing proactive stuff. Maybe now they need to start talking with Daytona Beach Police, with Flagler County Sheriff's Office, with Miami-Dade and Fort Lauderdale to find out better ways to patrol and police a beach community, because they have had some issues of late.
And so many people think, and I'm sorry, David, so many people think that, you know, people I've been talking with, that this isn't going to solve the issue. You know, it's kind of like, you guys remember Footloose? Am I going back in time way too much? The movie?
No.
You know, right?
Because we all remember, except for David, I think we all remember it.
Well, you know, remember they didn't want them to dance because it was going to be so bad and bring out the souls and ruin their souls.
And nobody wants to see Kevin Bacon dance.
No. Look,
I did in 1983.
Gonna cut loose. Look,
as somebody who grew up at the beach, right? I think the city of Jacksonville Beach has itself to blame. Look, they have completely changed First Street down there. They redid the entire strip down there to make it pedestrian friendly, to encourage this festival-like atmosphere beyond the Seawalk Pavilion into these bar areas. I mean, look, last time I walked into like one of these establishments that I used to frequent as a young guy in my early 20s, I'm now the oldest person there. The crowd has stayed young down there.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, what that means is young people, they tend to binge drink, they tend to be aggressive. Now there's just more places to do that. So I think, you know, hurting businesses by making them close, I don't think is going to solve the problem. You have created a festival-like atmosphere on a Friday and Saturday night down there.
And you might just binge drink till midnight and then hit the streets versus binge drinking till 2 o'clock and hitting the streets.
So is it a question, too, the city needs, Jacks Beach needs to decide if it wants to be that party atmosphere, festival-type atmosphere? Or does it want to be that small town atmosphere?
Latham is not a fan of that atmosphere.
Yeah. No, they've had city elections that were decided on that. Corey Nichols, he was running for office, basically he's an advocate for these businesses. I believe he's running again. And that's basically the discussion. Do you want to be the kind of city that has the stuff, warts and all, or do you want to be the kind of city that pretends like you're Neptune Beach or Atlantic Beach? City leaders in Jacksonville Beach seem to have this illusion they can be like these other beach communities. They're not. It's a different beach. It's got different atmosphere. And they've got to find a way to accommodate, you know, what people are doing in terms of their consumer basis. I don't think that universal surveillance is the answer. I don't think putting cameras up everywhere is the answer. It's something that there's going to be a give and take to it, and there's got to be a different way other than we're going to legislate this out of existence, because it's not going to happen.
Well, that police department has, after some recent problems, increased their visibility. They put more cruisers and more officers out. They certainly did that for July 4th. And I will tell you, though, after the incidents over the past year or two at the Jacksonville Landing, the police presence there is really humongous. During the Tuesday night events, any night, any day you drive by, there's three police cars now parked in front of and on the sidewalk. I don't know if that would make me a happy camper if I wanted to go to an event and all I see are cops.
Right.
I think if you open, the more bars you open in a small little spot there, the more people you're going to have there who are getting drunk, who are, you know, again, binge drinking and then flooding out of these bars. And then where do they go? Right. They hang out in the parking lot for 30 minutes.
Yeah,
and then
closing
stuff
at
happens.
Midnight the solution. Well, who knows? Speaking of business development, a big change for Jacksonville's business community. Andre Wallace, who has headed up the Downtown Investment Authority in this city for several years, is heading down the street to become the new president of Jacks USA, the economic development arm of the Jacks Chamber. Wallace takes over in October and replaces the retiring Jerry Malott. This is a big change for business in the city. Jacks USA's role is to develop business and create jobs throughout this 7-county area. So congrats to Andre Wallace. And now the question is, who will be tapped to lead the progress he's created in growing the urban core and lead the Downtown Investment Authority?
There are a lot of deals yet to be done. There's this deal with this convention center. There's, you know, Lot J. But if you look at what Andre has done over the last 5 years, he got a lot of these deals to the finish line. He got the Laura Street Trio deal done. He got the district deal done. I think it's a gain for the JAX USA partnership. I think it's a loss for the city. But for Andre, I think he, you know, the big question is, did he apply for this job or was he recruited? And we haven't had a chance to sit down with him yet. Mm-hmm. So I think that's an interesting point here as well.
Yeah, I mean, it's a very interesting move. I mean, I look at what Andre Walz has done over the last 5 years in terms of downtown revitalization, and David is right on in terms of that. But I think at JAX USA partnership, he's going to have a role that, you know, we can't undersell him. He's going to be involved in corporate recruitment, bringing businesses to Jacksonville. And, you know, that's a very big deal for, you know, growth of the tax base, for jobs, for everything else. So I think this is going to be a net win for the city, at least through the next economic downturn.
And I think it's good to point out as well that I believe he's the first African-American to hold this high position.
To lead the JAX USA partnership.
Absolutely. I think that's a big deal.
Yeah. It says a lot about our city and our growth and where we're going and our direction.
So, yeah, kudos to him. And then it will be interesting to see who gets chosen to lead the downtown efforts. The Downtown Investment Authority that was created during the Alvin Brown administration as a way to keep continuity going on getting some excitement and projects brought to completion in the urban core, which is a big part of economic development for Jacksonville.
And you got to remember, Andre was an outsider. He wasn't from Jacksonville. They recruited him to come here. Do they have somebody here in Jacksonville who could do it?
It's a big job.
Possibly a board member that's already there, who knows? Or do they recruit outside of it?
I would think they do another national search.
I think they should. Yeah, I think that's what made Andre such a good person for that job, is because he didn't have the Jacksonville goggles on. He said, look, we've done this in Miami. We've done this in other places I've been. You have to be, and I hate to say this, you have to be bold. You have to be able to move forward and get outside of your bubble of, we can't do this.
This would be an interesting role for Lori Boyer.
Absolutely.
I mean, that would be kind of interesting. You've got some termed out city council people. Lori Boyer is right at the top of the list. Greg Anderson, he's got banking experience. If you look at people like that, you know, they know how city government works. They know how the DIA works. And, you know, they'd be natural fits.
Well, finally, it's our look at the strange, bizarre, and just plain ridiculous from around the state this week. Luckily, there is never a shortage of material. Here it is for you right now, only in Florida. The Barnyard Edition. Do you like our new music?
I was going to say.
I love this. Ooh.
Do you like this music?
Play music.
Yes, no. We made a change today. I welcome all feedback. Okay. Only in Florida do cows help capture criminals. Did you see this?
Moving.
A herd of 16 cows helped police in Sanford corral a fleeing suspect who bailed out of the car and ran through a pasture. A Seminole County Sheriff's helicopter captured the incident on video Sunday night as the chopper crew gave play-by-play to officers on the ground. The cows eventually ran the suspect, Jennifer Ann Kaufman, right into a fence where police were raiding to arrest her.
The cows were milking it for all it was worth.
That's right.
Did they get a free chicken sandwich?
Exactly.
No, wait, there's more. Only in Florida does someone dump live chickens on front lawn of City Hall. It happened in Bradenton when employees arrived Wednesday, only to find about 30 chickens digging into the mulch, roosting in the bushes, and some had even made it up into the trees. Officials quickly hatched a plan on what to do with the birds. Animal control was called in. The chickens are going to a local school as part of the 4-H Club for Future Farmers of America. Officials think it was a stunt as a push to allow domesticated chickens within Bradenton City
limits.
We've
had that issue in Jacksonville.
One of those chickens getting appointed to city council.
That's one heck of a senior prank.
I know. Forget about teepee and trees. They put chickens in the trees.
Don't we have roosters that go around downtown? You know?
By the way, you can have 4 hens. And yeah, I hear the rooster crowing in Springfield. Every morning.
Yep.
Every morning I hear that rooster crow. You can keep 4 chickens in your backyard, by the way. I don't know if everybody realized that. So please don't drop any chickens for Lenny Curry to deal with on the front steps.
Those were turkeys. That was
you put them in the campaign ad like last time.
Thanks, Dan Scanlon, Angela Spears, David Cotton, A.G. Gankarski. We'll be right
weekend.
Back with the cast.
Happy Friday.
Happy Friday. We'll be right back with the cast of Kiss Me, Kate.
community hospice and palliative care. Since 1979, the compassionate guide for more than 200,000 patients facing advanced illness in Northeast Florida. Today, serving 16 counties, including yours. Available 24/7 to help you and your loved one. More at choosecommunityhospice.com.
Wayne Hogan of the Terrell Hogan Law Firm. Malignant mesothelioma. Asbestos dust causes this cancer. Learn more from board-certified civil trial specialist Wayne Hogan at waynehogan.law.
Dead heats, a show trial, and Elon Musk takes Tesla for a private test drive. A lot's been going on, and the weather is playing its part, too. Californians are warned it will take at least a month to contain the largest fire in state history. The Friday News Roundup, next time on 1A. Today at 10 on 89.9 WJCT.
On the next Fresh Air.
December 15th, 1992, New York. Ira Glass called to say that Morning Edition would like to broadcast my Santaland diary.
We feature my interview with David Sedaris, recorded after the publication of his book of diary entries, which is now out in paperback. I hope you'll join us. Today at noon on 89.9 WJCT, your community, your world.
Did you know that the silicon for Silicon Valley comes from sand in North Carolina and that sand thieves stole part of a beach in Jamaica? I'm Ira Flatto. On the next Science Friday, the amazing role sand plays in our lives. Plus, science and dance collide, from choreographing the Higgs boson to saving endangered sea turtles. It's all on Science Friday from WNYC Studios.
Friday at 3 on 89.9 WJCT.
Finally, this hour, it is the beloved Broadway classic that earned the very first Tony Award for Best Musical. Kiss Me, Kate, with music and lyrics by Cole Porter, is the tale of a classic battle of the sexes. The show is on stage now at the Alhambra Theater. We're pleased to welcome stars Chris Sanders, Tracy Baer, Matthew Alexander, and Lauren Robinson. Hey, everybody.
Good morning.
Hi.
Okay, Tracy and Chris, let's start with you. This was based on real people, wasn't Kiss Me, Kate, based on Alfred Lunt and Lynn Fontanne, a famous theater couple?
Yes, yes. And it was actually based on their performance of The Taming of the Shrew and all the backstage
all
antics.
All the backstage antics.
Yes.
How funny. Okay, so who do you play Fred in
I
the
play
show.
Fred, yes. And he also plays Petruchio in The Taming of the Shrew portion of the show. So,
Fred, you're reunited with your ex-wife. Tracy, you play Fred's ex-wife.
Yeah, Lily.
Mm-hmm. And you seem to hate each other, but there are still feelings there.
Lots
definitely.
Of feelings.
Yes. Yes. Yeah, it's only a year after the divorce, so it's fresh, and that resurfaces for sure.
And so the battle of the sexes, I guess, continues on stage and off stage.
And off stage, and she wins.
That's good. Okay, Matthew and Lauren, who do you play in this production?
I play Bill, and in Taming the Shrew part, I play Lucentio.
Oh, and you in the Shakespeare,
yes.
In the play within the play.
Within the play within the play, correct.
Okay, and how much fun is that to do?
It's so great. This opportunity came up, and I get a little song, a little dance, and I'm enjoying it.
Yeah, it's a fun show. Lauren, what's your part?
I'm Lois Lane, and I play Bianca in Taming of the Shrew.
Oh, wow. So what's the audience reaction been like so far?
They seem to be really enjoying. I think it's such a unique show because the comedy appeals to so many different generations. Like, the wordplay is so clever, but there's also just like some really hilarious physical comedy.
And the music and lyrics by Cole Porter.
This was Cole Porter's response to Oklahoma, because he had not written a musical that actually the songs were part, you know, moved the story along. Mm. This was the first time he had done that. So this was his response to the success of Rodgers and Hammerstein's Oklahoma.
Mm. Well, we have a special treat because Chris and Tracy are going to sing a song from the production. It's called So in Love. And here we go.
Strange, dear, but true, dear, when I'm close to you, dear, the stars fill the sky, so in love with you I
my arms fold about you.
The whole show, because Kiss Me Kate is running through September 9th at the Alhambra Theater. Such a talented cast. Thanks, everyone, for being here.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Break a leg. Get out to the Alhambra. If you've never been, you're going to love it. Great theater and great food, too. Okay, that's our show. I hope you all enjoyed it. Thanks to all of our guests and callers. Our producer is Kevin Mershart. Michelle Corum runs the board. Our theme by the symphony's Pyotr Chevchik. And if you missed anything this morning, make sure to catch our rebroadcast tonight at 8 o'clock. Also, don't forget to join us at 1 o'clock this afternoon for our new statewide program, the Florida Roundup, a live call-in show where everyone around the state can discuss the biggest stories of the week for the Sunshine State. Up next on 1A, the Friday News Roundup. I'm Melissa Ross. This is 89.9 WJCT-FM Jacksonville. Have a great weekend.
Support for First Coast Connect is provided by Baptist Health and the North Florida TPO.